Good evening, everyone. The meeting of the Ways and Means Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. And members, we've got the minutes of March 20th before us. Representative Carlson moves the minutes of March 20th, except if I can have them incorporate on the back the fourth line from the bottom. Instead of it saying House File 1659, it should say House File 1620. Any corrections, additions, changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, the item of business this evening is the budget resolution, and we have some people that want to testify this evening. What I will do is I will move the CS-RES 01 resolution, just so that it's before us. And I can go through and talk about it, but I think just in the interest of time, we'll first have the testifiers come forward. So who is the first person I have on the list is Patrice Howard, Director of Community Schools and Partnerships, Brooklyn Center Community Schools. Or did they want Kendra first? Oh, together. They're going to go together. Okay. Okay, I think we're just taking these in the order that we were contacted with. So, well, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. If you can please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
I'm Patrice Howard. Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing the opportunity to speak with you this evening. My name is Patrice Howard. I'm representing Brooklyn Center Community Schools as the Director of Community Schools and Partnerships. As you may be aware, Brooklyn Center Community Schools has served as the state's first and only full-service community school district for quite some time, with over 100 programs and partnerships, coordinating supports that respond to the needs of the whole child by reducing barriers to learning through on-site coordination of partnerships and services. We also pose as the state's leader for technical assistance, supporting other districts, community organizations, and other potential stakeholders who have expressed interest in this model. Since 2009, Brooklyn Center has produced positive outcomes across several indicators, from increased graduation rates, 87.4%, increased efforts for family and community engagement, access to whole child supports, which includes medical, dental, and mental health services, serving over 2,700 young people annually, and decreased absenteeism, to name a few. We know that this model works, we see it, and we have the data, but we also need your help. And although we have produced and demonstrated positive gains, this was not achieved without the support of coordination. Prior to our community school site coordinators, Brooklyn Center had only one individual, which is myself, that worked for 6 years tackling this work alone. However, to accomplish this work effectively by responding to the needs of building specifics as it relates to students, more coordination support was identified. I'm here today to attest to the need for financial support, as funding will support coordination, as well as support for other districts looking to scale up efforts. Additionally, funding will support statewide technical assistance, which will allow efficient support for those ready to implement. Your support for this model is greatly needed, as the full service community schools framework is effective, and it supports all young people, families, teachers, and community. As someone who has witnessed the fruits of this work, I strongly encourage you to check it out and to come and visit us as well as our friends. Once again, I want to thank you for this opportunity and thank you for allowing us to be here this evening.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. My name is Kendra Cataff, and I'm a special education teacher in Farmington. I'm here to say how disappointed I am in this budget, especially with the low education target. We have a $1.6 billion surplus. But under your budget, you're giving $1.3 billion in tax cuts and only $258 million to education. That's not even enough to provide an increase to the formula to keep up with inflation. Our schools lack counselors, social workers, and psychologists. We have enormous special education cross-subsidy. We have an opportunity gap to fill. Our students suffer from homelessness, hunger, and mental illness. We have kids not ready for kindergarten and a waiting list of school districts that want to provide voluntary pre-K. We are having a hard time recruiting and retaining teachers. Educators are leaving this profession because of the lack of resources and support, and because they can't make ends meet due to low starting salaries, high health costs, and student loan debt. In Farmington, as a special education teacher, I see the daily impact on students dealing with mental illness conditions, as well as a growing awareness of the effects of childhood trauma. This affects their well-being and their ability to learn. We are in high need of supports, such as social workers and additional counselors, to meet these needs, and we need your help. In Farmington, like other districts, we struggle with meeting the financial needs due to this lack of sufficient funding based on the formula, which has not kept up with inflation. Time and time again, we have to turn to our residents who are overtaxed with levies and bonds, and we feel that we are tapped out. This practice of funding brings inequity, especially for those communities lacking enough businesses to share in this investment. Not long ago, I had the opportunity like this one to address the Senate committee on the urgent attention needed to the formula. To dig us out of this hole created over those 10 dark years of not keeping up with inflation, here we are again, only this time there's a surplus to rectify the recent past and to make it right for our children and their future. You have a chance to do the right thing. It is disappointing, but our students deserve better, and I urge you to reprioritize your budget and to put kids first. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Kaduff or the previous testifier? I guess I would like to ask you, Ms. Kaduff, if I could, do you support the governor's 2% and 2% on the formula then?
Is that what you
would be satisfied with?
Absolutely. That would do a tremendous amount of help.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to clarify that with the testifiers. So the governor's budget proposes 2% and 2%. Would that solve all the funding needs that you are experiencing in your school?
Well, not being someone in that role in the, you know, financial world, I know that that will go a long way in helping for sure. Yes.
But would it solve all your problems?
I don't know if we could ever solve all of our problems.
So I think it's important, right?
Yeah, it's extremely important.
The gap between what is proposed in this budget and then where the governor is. And trying to understand what that means for our school districts. And Representative Knobloch was suggesting that maybe 2% and 2% was enough and you'd be good and done.
Yeah. I mean, anything above what they've been offering will help get us out of that hole, I feel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So anything above what's in this budget resolution would help?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right, next we have Kathy Nathan and Heather Starks. Ms. Nathan and Ms. Starks, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you for being here this evening. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Kathy Nathan, and I'm from the Minnesota PTA. Thank you for the opportunity to share our remarks with you this evening. The expenditure targets for education in this budget resolution are unacceptable for our children, our schools, and Minnesota's long-term success. The 1.5% increases in the general education basic formula continue the disappointing trend of underfunding our public schools, which has gone on for more than a decade. Now, maybe we parents have been complacent. Maybe we haven't been clear enough to you about our priorities for our children and our schools. But I assure you that now, in the face of school funding trends and budget proposals like this, we are no longer going to be complacent. We are watching, we are learning, and we are acting. So who's watching? The parents of a four-year-old who recognize the importance of being ready for kindergarten, only to wonder if their child will have adequate teacher attention to help their child learn to read by third grade if class sizes increase. Who's watching? Parents of middle school students who know the 1 in 5 adolescents who has a diagnosable mental health disorder. Parents who know our schools need more counselors and social workers available to help address these students' needs and to help all students navigate the difficulties of adolescence. Who's watching? Parents who want opportunities for their high school students to build both college prep and career technical skills so they are prepared for success beyond high school. Who's watching? Parents considering moving to Minnesota for a new job asking, where are the good neighborhoods and where are the good schools? With this level of funding, will there be good schools to attract the employees we need for Minnesota's growing workforce? Who's watching? Parents who own or lead a Minnesota business asking, if not the public schools, then who will help educate our workforce of tomorrow? A highly educated workforce has been essential to Minnesota's past economic success. If that workforce is not present in Minnesota, perhaps companies will consider doing business somewhere else. Please acknowledge the concerns of all these Minnesota parents and reconsider these targets. Support targets that increase the general education basic formula by at least 2% for each year of biennium. And thank you for your time.
Did you have some testimony too?
Yes.
Okay, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Heather Starks. I am the president-elect of the Minnesota PTA. And on behalf of our 220 units and 8,000 members, we appreciate the time to testify today. In 1971, educational excellence and equity was supposed to be the Minnesota miracle. The goal to provide a quality education in every district in Minnesota and eliminate inequalities and greater burdens on local taxpayers. But we are far from a Minnesota miracle today, with a House budget target that increases the general education basic formula by only 1.5% when the governor has proposed higher amounts, and that's not even enough. In order to meet the projected rate of inflation over the next biennium, the increase needs to be 2.5%. According to the Association for Metropolitan School Districts, the current basic funding formula would be $550 per pupil higher if it had simply kept pace with inflation since 2003. At these 1.5% targets, local school districts will be forced to dismiss teachers and support staff, increase class sizes, narrow curriculums, and cut after-school activities. This kind of target does not get us closer to the well-rounded education Minnesota students need, does not provide the resources essential to closing our teaching gaps, and does not support the development of a college and career-ready, highly educated workforce that supports a strong Minnesota economy. Please support education targets that match or exceed the governor's proposal to increase the general education basic formula by 2% for each year of the biennium. Thank you.
All right. Do any members have any questions for either Ms. Naisland or Ms. Stark? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the second, I don't know how to pronounce your name, the second testifier.
Heather Starks.
Stark. You had brought up a figure of $550 per student as being a baseline for inflation. If you were to, if the budget were increased $550 per student, would you say that that would be fully funding education?
No, it would just be what our, it would just keep from inflation from 2003. I don't know that it's necessarily enough to fund education right now.
Representative Dean.
Thank you. And just finally, if $550 per student in addition to what we currently have is not enough to fully fund education, what would that amount be?
I do not feel I have the expertise to answer that question.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the testifiers? Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank you for bringing your expertise in looking out for our children.
Other questions? Are there any other testifiers that wish to testify? Thank you, Ms. Nathan and Ms. Starks. Okay, we had the four individuals. Well, go ahead if you wish. Yes, we had the four individuals on the list, but we're happy to have others. Ma'am, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness. I just wanted to say that we had really hoped that the Health and Human Services target would have been a little bit higher. I think everyone knows that there's a lot of unmet mental health needs. You can talk to any principal or superintendent in your district, any police chief or sheriff in your area, any hospital administrator, any emergency room doctor, and they'll all tell you that we are not yet meeting the needs of people. The mental health system is still under construction. We've made great gains in the past decade due to bipartisan support, but the unmet needs are still there. One of the areas that we're particularly concerned about is we are losing the federal Medicaid match for our children's residential treatment. That's about 700 beds that will no longer receive federal funds. We need to either the counties will have to pick up that total cost or the state needs to help. We know that supportive housing is a huge issue. We have a flow issue in our system, and people are stuck in high levels of care because we don't have supportive housing in the community. We know particularly the importance of schooling to mental health to really intervene early and help those children succeed in life and in school. We know we have serious workforce shortages, and so the loan forgiveness programs have helped, but you know clearly we need more. And I would also say that increasing funding for first psychotic episode programs are really important. That is the most disabling mental illness out there, and we don't do a good job of intervening early when it can really make the biggest difference and make sure those young people get back to school or work and that the trajectory of their life doesn't change much. And then lastly, I just want to mention that there has been efforts with the Minnesota Hospital Association and the counties to redirect the county dollars that are currently paying for state-operated programs when someone is no longer needs the level of care provided at one of our state hospitals, and that money goes to the general fund instead of actually increasing community-based services. So thank you for your attention, and just wanted to mention that we still have unmet mental health needs. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. I do want to mention, too, that we did get your letter in the last meeting and made a copy and had passed it out to everyone. So I want you to know that we did do that. Is there any? Are there any questions for the testifier, Representative Liebling?
Thank you. Am I doing this? Do I have to push something? No.
Okay. Nope, you're good.
Okay. Ms. Abderholden, thank you very much for your testimony. And as you know, we've in the Health and Human Service Committees this session, we have heard many, many bills on mental health. And I think it's fair to say that the entire committee, both committees, both the Policy Committee and the Finance Committee, members on both sides are very interested in improving our mental health system. I didn't prepare you for this question, so it's okay if you don't know the answer, but have you kept a total at all of the cost of the many bills that members have brought? And I have to say, I think they're mostly Republican members that have brought the bills. Have you got any idea of how much it would cost to fund the bills that the Republican members have brought before the Finance Committee this year?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, no, I have not. We're not that fully staffed at my office to be able to kind of track that. But again, I think it does point that we really have enjoyed bipartisan support on this issue because everyone gets impacted by mental illness.
Okay.
And Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, well, to the members of the committee and I guess to the public in the Health and Human Service Finance Committee, I don't know the answer. I asked you a question hoping you would know, but our staff has been totaling some of the bills that have been brought forward just by the Republicans of the committee, and it's well north of $2 billion, not just on mental health, mind you, but on all of the committees that have brought forward, a lot of them on disability services generally, which of course includes people with mental illness, but billions of dollars of requests for funding, and then what we have from the House GOP is a cut target of almost $600 million. So there is a real disconnect there, Mr. Chair, a serious disconnect. I mean, nobody expects that every bill is going to get funded, of course. But it certainly didn't seem like we were going toward a cut target of this magnitude in health and human services, and certainly not with the budget surplus that we do have. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if it's a question more than a statement. I just heard my friend, Representative Liebling, commenting on the budget, and I'm looking at the budget resolution before us, which is calling for a 16.6% increase in the health and human services target for health and human services, 16.6%. And I'm fairly certain that there are no revenue streams into the state of Minnesota that grow at that rate. And I just don't recall the members of the DFL offering tax increases to pay for revenue streams that could meet that sustained level of spending. But I'll have to have nonpartisan staff look into that for me because I could be mistaken. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Representative Liebling?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, of course, you know, what your increase or decrease looks like always depends, of course, on what you use for a base. And in health and human services, a lot of the programs are forecasted programs, including some additional forecasted spending that the Republicans put in place in the last term for nursing homes. So there are forecasted increases here. Nursing homes now, I think we all agreed that they needed help, and they're now on a forecast basis, what we call value-based budget, I think it's called. But that means that they're kind of a little bit more on automatic pilot. We know that our Medicaid program, as it is currently constructed, is a forecast program so that we, as people become eligible and as their needs grow, we do a lot in our programs for people with disabilities. And, of course, so it depends on what your base is. But as Republican members have brought in billions of dollars worth of spending bills, I think the expectation was that because we had a budget surplus that some of those bills would be funded. I don't know what the chair's intention is going to be, but I didn't see them raising any taxes, Representative Garofalo. So, but I think with a $1.6 billion surplus, I think there was some expectation that we would be able to move forward in some of these areas where Minnesotans are really hurting. Minnesotans have real needs, and some of these needs, we're never going to be able to meet all needs, but there are a lot we can meet and a lot of differences we can make. And a lot of these things that we can do in our health and human service area are actually pretty low cost and can make a lot of difference for our children if we were able to fund them.
Does anyone have any other questions for Ms. Aberholden? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify this evening? All right. Well, then, members, what I'd like to do is go back to the resolution, and I'd like to go through it and give you my rationale for why I think this is what we should be doing for our budget targets this year. So I guess I direct you to page 1, line 4 of the budget resolution, RES-01, and I'll just kind of walk through it line by line. The proposal is to have a maximum limit, including tax cuts and tax expenditures, of $46,349,978,000 for the fiscal years 2018 and 19 in the general fund. We're not proposing to make any changes in the budget reserve or take any money out of the cash flow account. And then when we look at the individual committees, going down starting at line 10, in agriculture, I'm proposing in this resolution that we increase it by $1 million over what we spent in the last biennium. In the capital investment area, the number that you see, the $1,398,741,000 would allow for two $800 million bonding bills, an $800 million bonding bill this year and an $800 million bonding bill next year. Line 13, let me elaborate on a little bit since we've had this discussion on education. Members, The target of $18,529,739,000 is over $1.1 billion more for 18-19 than it was for 16-17. That represents a 6.3% increase in funding over the last biennium, which is more than what inflation is. People have talked about the general fund, about the student formula, but you know, that only encompasses maybe half of all the spending in the education area. There are a lot of other spending streams in the education area. And if you go back a number of years, if you went back to the 1970s, as one witness referenced, and looked at total spending per student compared to inflation, you would find that our spending has grown well in excess of inflation if you count all spending, not just the formula, but all spending. And so we are here proposing a $1.1 billion increase, a 6.3% increase over the last biennium. If you look at the Environment and Natural Resources Fund, there were 21 point some million dollars below the base. But as you will see as the bills come out, we're actually proposing to transfer $22 million out of that area into being funded by legacy. So there's actually going to be, if you count that, a slight increase to base underneath this proposal. And the Health and Human Services area, as was referenced, this represents a 16.67% increase. It's up $1,959,000,000. This is the largest increase in both an absolute basis and in a percentage basis of any of the committees that we have. And while I know it represents a reduction to the base, if you look at what's going on potentially out in Washington, D.C., I think we need to be trying to bend down the growth of Health and Human Services spending in preparation for might what well be coming in the near future in changes in funding from Washington, D.C. And so that's part of the rationale for what I'm proposing here, still an almost $2 billion increase in spending. In a higher education, we have a 5% increase above base in the job growth and energy affordability finance bill. We're $11 million above base. Of course, in the legacy bill, there's no general fund spending, so we're proposing zero there. In the public safety and security finance bill, we're proposing a 5% increase. In the state government finance bill, we're proposing a 10% reduction. We believe that there are some, in some cases, one-time efficiencies there, in some cases, permanent efficiencies that we can gain by making some changes in that area. The bottom line on page one, the tax bill, contains both tax expenditures, items in the tax bill, spending for local government aid, property tax refunds, renters credits, and so forth, as well as $1,350,000,000 in additional tax cuts and expenditures. If you turn the page over, transportation, you'll see on page two, line one, that we're proposing $586,600,000 in general fund spending. That's a 111% increase over 2016 and 17. We really do believe that we need to put some more money into the transportation system, particularly roads and bridges, and so we are allocating some significant new funds for that. And, of course, this is based on the February forecast. And, members, I'd appreciate your support on the RES-01 resolution, and I'd be open to questions or discussion, and I also know there are some other amendments. Representative Leganis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be looking at the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Bill, and I'm wondering if when you did, and I note that your base is, I see what you did with your base, but we will be spending $94 million less in this coming biennium than in the current one, so that's real money. But my question, it gets at, when you were doing your numbers, were you considering the Trump administration cuts to EPA and cuts to the Great Lakes?
Well, Representative Wagenius, I think that, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen in that area. In regard to the Great Lakes, for example, I think much of that's more of a bonding issue than it is a general fund issue. I mean, I know that the Great Lakes bonding initiative we had that I toured, I don't know, last year, I guess it was 2 years ago, up on Duluth, you know, it seemed to me to be a pretty good project, and unfortunately it didn't come to pass, and I'm hopeful that we can still have that come to pass. But, you know, there has been, of course, no bills that have passed Congress yet that affect this. I think we're going to have to just deal with as they come out what happens in this particular area. And I should also mention the other reference I have, when I talked about the $22 million being funded in the legacy area, Representative Gunther is the chair, can talk about that more, but I certainly don't want to give any sense that there's some sort of supplantation going on or anything. But Representative Wagenius.
Well, if I could follow up, the Great Lakes money that we spend could be bonding, but we spend a small portion compared to what the federal government has been giving us over time. And they have specifically said a 97% cut. And that's huge. So I think we can't just wait and say, we've done this budget and we're going to wait 2 years and, well, what's going to happen to some of the things that we would ordinarily do? I did take the opportunity to talk to PCA, and I said, what if you look at the EPA's proposed cuts, the Trump administration, and we have a strong president who looks like he's getting his way on the Affordable Care Act. I asked PCA, and they gave me a figure of a $10.5 million cut from the federal government if the Trump budget went through. I haven't had an opportunity to talk to DNR and Bowser about the same things, but I think you can see the numbers just from that. So I can't understand not taking reality of what's going on at the federal level into account.
Well, I guess what I would say, Representative Wagenius, is I think there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's going on at the federal level. I mean, the Trump administration has made this proposal, but I'm not aware that there are necessarily even any bills, I don't think, that have been introduced into Congress yet that would give us the language and suggest what's going to happen on this. And I've certainly heard plenty of Congress people and senators talk about how, even Republicans, how they maybe support President Trump, but maybe don't support every single thing that he's proposing. And so I think there is a lot of uncertainty as whether these potential reductions will come about. I think we need to, you know, if something happens before we adjourn this year, we can certainly make changes as needed. If the governor thinks that changes that do happen while we're gone are so important that we need to be called back, he, of course, has the power to call us back. And next year we'll be back, and we'll be writing a supplemental budget, and if we need to make adjustments, then we certainly can. Representative Wagenius.
Well, the only supplemental thing we could do is then to pull back on some of our tax cuts, and I've never seen much of an appetite for that around here, because you'd be taking away things from people. But it does concern me that we're not taking care of the basics. I mean, I heard from the parents, I heard about mental health. These are basics. I'll talk about drinking water sometime here too. But these are the basics. And a budget that doesn't take care of the basics is not what Minnesotans are expecting from us. So we'll have conversations about it.
I'm sure we will. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have a question for you. In your going through your budget resolution here, you named as the rationale for your Health and Human Service cut that we had to prepare for cuts coming from D.C. And, of course, we all know that the Republican Congress and the Trump administration are in the process of figuring out how to cut spending in Health and Human Services in some way. We don't know if the current bill is at least I haven't heard today if it passed. Maybe somebody else has more recent news. But I was wondering, you said that you were preparing in some way for cuts that would be coming from D.C. And, of course, we don't know. One of the bill that is currently being considered, of course, would take health insurance away from 24 million people is the estimate. We're looking at cuts to Medicaid of an unknown amount. How does your cut in this budget prepare us for what would be coming from D.C.? I just wonder what you mean by that. How in the world does that prepare us?
Well, Representative Luling, unlike the issues that Representative Wagini has brought up in terms of a Trump administration proposal where there's been no legislation introduced, here we have legislation that's been introduced. I understand the vote is supposed to be tomorrow. Now, from what I read in the paper, there may be somewhat more questions about whether that will actually pass or not. And even if it does pass the House, there is going to be, I'm sure, plenty of changes in the Senate. We're going to have to see how that comes through. But it seems like there is a likelihood that there are going to be some changes that take place in the whole health and human services area in Washington, D.C. And, you know, when you look at a major part of the budget that's growing 16.7%, frankly, even if there weren't changes happening, it would be ripe for looking at and trying to figure out how we can reduce the growth of it. And so I'm looking at trying to reduce the growth in this area, both A, because it is growing so rapidly without regard to whatever might be happening in Washington, D.C., but secondly, because I think we are, you know, in addition to what President Trump is saying, seeing some action by Congress that would lead us to believe that we might be getting less money in this area in the future. And so if we can not increase growth as much, if we can find efficiencies in these programs, that will pay dividends for us if, in fact, these other reductions come to pass in a couple of years. Representative Lee.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think one of the best ways to stop growth in this area would be to stop people from aging. Can you do that?
Representative Lee, I will await your bill on that subject.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're the one cutting the budget. I'm awaiting your bill on it. And in
Representative Lee, I'm raising the budget almost $2 billion.
Well, no, Mr. Chair, you are not raising the budget $2 billion. And, I mean, a lot of the answer to this question will actually happen when we see what the chair comes out with in terms of a bill. But we did hear from Ms. Abderholden, and you heard me say that in the Health and Human Services Finance Committee, we've heard well north of $2 billion in bills from Republican members. Now, those Republican members obviously see the need for some additional spending. And that is not accounted for in the forecast growth. So they obviously are putting forward bills that say that they see the need for additional things to happen in the state. I know Representative Baker is very interested in programs on addiction, dealing with our opioid crisis, other kinds of mental health issues. There are people in this state who have disabilities who are living in dire poverty. There are children in the state who aren't getting dental care and who are living in dire poverty. And frankly, Mr. Chair, I mean, I do not see, you gave the rationale. I think it's pretty clear what the rationale is. I think the rationale overall is that you and your members obviously think that giving big tax cuts is more important than taking care of people in need in this state. And I, for one, think that's really a shameful position.
Well, Representative Liebling, you are right that I am not proposing to increase spending by $2 billion. I'm proposing to increase it by $1,959,000,000. And if you look at the sheet that Mr. Marks prepared that was passed out, you can see that according to the February forecast, the latest one we had for fiscal year 2016-17, the estimate is that the state will spend in general fund money. Now, remember, there's lots of other federal and other money besides being spent here, but just in general fund money, we'll be spending $11,766,111,000, $11.8 billion, and I am proposing underneath this resolution to go to from $11.8 billion, $13 billion, $725,310,000. So $1,959,000, a 17% increase, an almost $2 billion increase. You know, members, even if there wasn't anything going on in Washington, D.C., we don't collect anything close to a 17% increase in taxes from one biennium to another or other revenues for the state. We just can't continue to be growing the Health and Human Service budget at a rate of 17% a year, much less the larger figure that Representative Liebling would like us to be at. And so, members, that, you know, I understand that there are many needs here, and I know that Chair Dean has a tough job in sorting through and figuring out how to budget for all this, but this is, in total, if you consider federal funds, the largest budget we have in the state, and we simply cannot continue to grow far beyond our revenues. Other questions or discussion? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, we can all throw out a lot of numbers and percentages, but, you know, we have to keep in mind is that you're using the combined numbers 16-17. So, in effect, that goes back as far as 16, and you're projecting it out to 19 when you use those percentages. So time plays into those numbers that you're talking about when you go and combine that biennium, and one half of that biennium is 16, and then you project into the future, including 19. So you've got several years there. So if we were to annualize these percentages, they would, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, look quite a bit different than what you've proposed. But I also find it rather interesting when you went through the budget resolution, you sometimes used percentages when that was to your advantage as the way it, what I'm assuming, and then other times you used the dollar amount because you didn't want to use the percentage. So in the presentation, it wasn't necessarily consistent either when you're looking at the number of dollars that are on the table. That's not a question. That's just a comment. If you want to respond, fine. But I think for those that, I don't know if we're on TV today or not, but for the viewing audience, if they are, those that are in the audience, I think we're all aware you can play with these numbers to create different snapshots. I've sat where you're sitting, and I know how you can do some of that to have the best show, if you will, as to what you're doing. Probably at some point we should have some agreement on how we calculate those kinds of numbers so we aren't comparing apples and oranges, but I'll stop there.
Well, Representative Carlson, I guess I would just say a couple things. First of all, we do have you know, a number of documents in front of us prepared by nonpartisan House fiscal staff where people can look and compare what we spent in 2016 to 17 versus what we are proposing here. You know, we can look at the base. You can look at the actual spending. You know, you can make all those comparisons. It is true that, yes, when I talk about 17%, that's from 2016 to 17 to 18 to 19. I mean, if you want to annualize it, it's probably more like 8% than half that number. But if we are on TV, and I don't know if we are or not either, but if we are, I would challenge people watching and listening to ask themselves how many of them got an 8% pay increase this last year or an 8% pay increase in each of the last 2 years, because I bet not very many of them did. And yet that's what we've been doing in this particular budget. And just as hardly anyone who's watching this probably got an 8% increase in each of the last 2 years, Minnesota as a whole, I doubt, had increases like that in its overall GDP or its overall taxation. And so it, again, is just a very large number that we need to try to figure out how we can restrain the growth on. I'm not talking about cutting it. I'm talking about restraining the rate of growth. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, there are other things that go into these numbers, and I just compared the two biennium, and I was looking at the nonpartisan staff numbers that you you handed out. But we also have to, if we're going to really get into this deeply, remember that we've had population growth in the state of Minnesota. That influences the budget. We've also had caseload changes in Health and Human Services, and I don't happen to sit on that committee. Others can probably tell what some of those demographic changes that Representative Liebling referred to earlier, the aging population and what have you, that drives some of that. Clearly, we've talked about that for years, the changing demographics. I don't happen to have the percentages in front of me. And school finance, even if you had a static number, can go up or down depending upon the number of pupil units. So there's just a lot of things that go into the budget. And the point that I was making is that you can make the budget look the way you want to make it. And in this case, I found it rather interesting and wanted to point out that we're comparing with the sheets before us, biennium to biennium, and that covered basically a four-year period. But we all know there are other things that go into that. Same with higher education. Enrollment can be going up or down. You've got a major college in your district. I don't know if the enrollment is going up or down there, but in fact, you've got two. You've got a tech college there as well. So all of that comes into play with the growth of the budget, and there just has to be, I was pointing out in the future, maybe some way of arriving at an agreement as to how you show these numbers so there's some consistency and a building of a better understanding of what happens.
Well, Representative Carlson, I mean, I would agree with you. You're absolutely right. There is a lot of complexity. I mean, population growth is somewhat under 1% per year, but there is a lot of complexity here, and I'm not sure if we can ever come up with, unless it's a such a complex chart that hardly anyone could read it, something that somehow accounts for all the numbers and all the variations and all these things. There is a lot of complexity, but if people have, you know, other questions, and I'll recognize Representative Murphy in a second here, if people have other questions about how I, you know, portrayed the budget resolution as I went through and talked about numbers versus the base versus numbers versus, you know, prior biennial spending, yeah, I think pretty much all that information is available from nonpartisan staff and has been distributed. Representative
Carlson. Just a concluding comment, when we talk about the budget in terms of cost of government, if you'll recall, I requested that perhaps we have a hearing on that, and you did, and I want to thank you for that. But that showed that the cost of government is going down. So we do have that measurement as well. So I'll just stop there. It's more complex than what a spreadsheet necessarily shows, even though that in and of itself, depending on how you use it, can give you different pictures. But I'll stop there because Representative Murphy has probably got more to say than I do.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know we've got some amendments, and we should get to those. But I did want to comment on the 8% increase, that notion that lots of people across the state aren't getting an 8% increase, and I just want to add some context to that. So, you know, we can quibble about the base funding that's in Health and Human Services, and, you know, you've acknowledged that there's a cut target, and you and the Speaker have made that decision, and Representative Dean and Representative Liebling and Representative Hamilton and I are on that committee, and we've been hearing from Minnesotans about the demand for services, and you characterize it as an 8% increase, you know, in your rough math. The people in that budget are our grandparents, they're veterans, they're people with intellectual disabilities, and they're people with physical disabilities, and kids, Minnesota families that, you know, for one reason or another need the support in the acquisition of their health care or some human service support so they can live the life of their choosing to the best of their ability. And there is a tremendous amount of pressure on that budget, and we all know that, and I think that the members that are here that are on that committee are going to wrestle with that and with this cut target that you and the Speaker have given to us, and we will do our very best on behalf of Minnesotans, but I want you to remember that those are people and people who are vulnerable that we're talking about, and that 8% increase sounded kind of cavalier from my perspective, especially when we consider that we've already sent $600 million out the door to insurance companies who are already doing very well. They're already doing very well. And yes, they want to probably use some of that money to make sure that people have access to coverage. But there's a definite choice that we're making here. about who we're looking out for. And we've got a $600 million cut target now in Health and Human Services, and we just sent $600 million to insurance companies. That seems pretty stark to me.
Well, Representative Murphy, I guess I would say we have a $2 billion increase target because, well, excuse me, a $1,959 million increase target because that is how much we are proposing to spend in terms of an increase in just general fund money in this committee. Keep in mind that there's matching federal money for much of that expense, so it's going up a lot more than that. But I hear what you're saying, Representative Murphy, and you know, regarding the other bills that were passed, we are trying on the Republican side to keep people's health insurance affordable. And there were decisions that were made here several years ago that created a big problem for people in Minnesota in terms of getting health insurance, and now we are unfortunately in a situation of having to spend that money, some of that money, to try to correct that problem. And that's what we're trying to do is help Minnesotans with affording their health insurance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, just to reiterate that we are now in a Republican majority, and you and the Speaker are making these choices. Thank you.
Okay, members, I know there's a couple of amendments. Oh, Representative Markwart, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Representative Markwart.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. If members are done asking questions, I'll offer the First Amendment.
Oh, great. Okay. Which one is that?
The A5 Amendment.
The A5 Amendment. Okay. Representative Markwart offers the A5 Amendment. Could you describe the amendment, Representative Markwart?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Education has always been the state's top priority. In fact, it's been a well-trained, well-prepared workforce that's been the key to an excellent economy and a very strong state. And so what this amendment would do would create a better balance with priorities of Minnesotans. And what it would do, it would increase the education target by $561 million to a figure of $818 million over the base in education and decrease the tax target by $561 million. And so, Mr. Chair, what this would do, this would provide the funding and the investment to be able to do a 2.5% increase on the basic formula in the next 2 years. And then also go with the governor's voluntary pre-K at $175 million. And I just want to talk a little bit about the basic formula. And, you know, when you look at those are the dollars that is kind of the basis that every school district gets. Everyone per pupil, you get that equal amount. And you were correct, Mr. Chair, in that it's probably, you know, it's less than half of the total funding in the education. But for some school districts, it represents a very large part just because they may not qualify for some of the other categoricals, if you will. And it is the one fund where school districts have the dollars that they can be creative and use that to close the achievement gap and get high student quality. And so why 2.5%? You know, I know a lot of the school groups early in the year were asking for 3%. Each of the next 2 years, and you've heard folks say, you know, we would settle for two. But if you look at inflation, the February forecast said in the next 2 years, inflation, the CPI would be 2.1%, 2.1% each of the next 2 years. And just a week or so ago, the Bureau of Labor Statistics put out their monthly statistics, and from February 16 to February 17, the CPI is 2.4%. Which they did say is the largest since March of 2012. But it's 2.4%. And in the February forecast, they said in 20 and 21, the inflation is going to go 2.6 to 2.7. So the fact of the matter is, for the most part, we have not been keeping up with inflation. And so 2.5% would really kind of put us where we really should be on that. And I know, Mr. Chair, you had mentioned that, you know, education funding's increasing $1.1 billion with the $257 million you're putting in over base. So you have about little under $800 million that is being increased from last session to this session. But the forecast, and if you get the numbers, say it's driven by two primary factors. The increase in student count. We're going to have 8,000 more students in the next 2 years in the state, 8,000 more in our public schools. And the other factor was the long-term maintenance equalization, which is about $130 million that we voted for, a great program, but and those dollars don't go into the classroom. So the point is, what I'm trying to make is, most of those dollars that we're talking about, that 800 you're referring to, isn't really creating new revenue per student for our schools. And I think if you were to talk to superintendents and folks in the know, they would not be saying we're getting all sorts of new money just because. Again, it's current law. And so what this does, you know, the target is about a percent and a half over the base is what you're looking at, right? About 257 million. This would properly fund our schools as far as meeting inflation and giving them flexibility to get the world's best workforce. And on the other side, on the voluntary pre-K, and I know, Madam Chair, there's going to be some debate on this. And I think we all around this table agree that early childhood and early learning scholarships, school readiness, and pre-K, all of these things are good. And if we can get everyone to the starting line at the same time in kindergarten, we're going to go a long ways to closing the achievement gap. And I remember Rob Grunewald, who's an economist with the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank, said that if you could close the achievement gap, within 15 years, it would increase our gross domestic product in Minnesota by 2 to 3%. Now, that doesn't seem like a great amount, but it's $5 to $8 billion. And to put that into perspective, it would be like building 5 to 8 Viking stadiums a year. Maybe that's not a good way to put it. But that's how valuable that would be if you could close that achievement gap. It would have that type of an impact on the state. And so, you know, whether or not whatever the approach, but I think combined with early learning scholarships and other things, the more choices we can provide parents on where to send their preschoolers would be the best. And we all know, and there's all sorts of studies out there, that these programs work. Now, some programs they have found, they work, and then they kind of, in first, second, third grade, they kind of plateau. But what the research shows is that if you can get parents involved and you can have continuity and you can have a curriculum that is strong, it gathers these gains and you continue these gains. And in early childhood, you also have the long-term gains, higher income, lower crime rates, higher graduation rates that are long-term. So members, this invests in people. This is placing our priorities in people and students. And when we have done that in the past in Minnesota, we've always gotten better and stronger. And so, members, I'd like you to consider this. I think it puts things more in balance with the priorities of the state and what really fuels our state economy and our state's quality of life.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would respectfully speak against the Marquardt Amendment, my good friend from Dilworth. If we supported, this is what we're voting on. If you support the Marquardt Amendment, you're hurting young children. You're hurting the smallest Main Street businesses. People will lose their family farms. Seniors will be taxed out of their homes. Student debt will not be forgiven. And widows of veterans could lose their homes. So I hope you'll support me as I respectfully vote no on the amendment.
And Representative Davids, those are all items that you're anticipating are going to be in the tax bill that would otherwise be defunded by this amendment. Is that true?
That's true, and I don't know what order or how much, but those are the things we'd have to cut. We'd have to be kicking widows out of their homes, and I'm not going to do that.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this would leave in the resolution, it would provide $818 million above base for education, and it would still leave $800 million for tax cuts. And so a lot of good things in that tax bill. And you could continue to do those with $800 million in Social Security for seniors and farmers and young families and working families and businesses. So I just trying to create a better balance that I think where most Minnesotans would be at. And so I do not like to disagree with my good friend and tax chair over there, Representative Davids, who's worked very, very hard on that tax bill this year.
Representative Markworth, I guess this is a couple hundred million dollars. You're proposing to spend a couple hundred million dollars more than the governor is proposing to spend in this area. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, I think the governor's target's about $300 million. Not net, but $300 million of cuts. So this would be still about $100 million.
Okay, I'm talking about education. I'm saying what you're proposing in the in your A5 amendment is, I'm thinking, a couple hundred million dollars more in spending than the governor's proposal. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, I think it would be about $109 million more, because the governor in his supplemental budget added $100 million more to the pre-K, which I think brings this target to 709. Okay. So, and this would be 818. And I would like, for the third time, they remember, I'd like to ask for a roll call if I could.
Oh, okay. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, there will be a roll call. Other discussion on the Markworth A5 amendment. Representative Loom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I wasn't going to say anything, but I, you know, and Representative Markworth, I respect the points you raised and the ones you raised today in Education Finance Committee, and I know that we're going to have a good debate on the proposals in the Education Finance Bill, and I think, you know, particularly on the early childhood arena, because I think there is sort of becoming a divergence of opinion or where we go with that whole thing. And you know, so for members who are wondering, I've been asked about my target and that, and I, you know, the Ways and Means Chair has a very tough job too. You know, I was hoping I'd have enough in my target to go 2-2, but I think we put together a very good bill, a strong bill, with the money we got. As we went through the spreadsheet today, if we look at what was funded in 16-17 and what we're able to provide with the additional money in this resolution, we are increasing education spending 2.6% in fiscal year 18 and 2.9% in fiscal year 19. So above that rate of inflation, if it's 2.4, is accepted, or even a little higher in the second year, with all of the investments that we're making. So while I think we'll probably maybe end up higher than that at the end of the day, when we get a bill signed by the governor, I would expect, you know, it's not a terrible place to start. With regards to early childhood, you know, and I think I'm always trying to find areas of agreement with the governor, and this is one where I think our hearts are sort of aligned in terms of trying to do the best we can for young children who are born into economic disparity that often translates to an opportunity gap or an achievement gap for them, and it starts very early. But the pathway that has been suggested to us by research, by, you know, millions of dollars of investment in the private sector, by the business community and the others that have studied this, is to target those investments to the children who need it most. That is where you see the greatest reward. And the governor is now trying to put us in a pathway of having really, well, he calls it voluntary, it's a step into universal preschool. And that's just where he's headed. Where it is not targeted, it is free for all children. And the returns on those kids who don't necessarily need it is not great. It also divests or takes away money that we can devote to the children who truly need it. And while I wish we could, you know, we all wish we could maybe do everything for every child, we have to make decisions and devote resources where it's needed most. And there are questions that are being raised with regards to the spending that we're doing in early childhood with the various streams of funding, and I won't get into too great a detail, those on education, we've talked about this already, where there are answers to questions we can't get. The current children in those voluntary or beginning universal pre-K programs, 3,300 of them, the department can't tell us if they're getting other streams of funding that we're also paying for. We know anecdotally some of the kids in those preschool programs are being picked up from a four-star rated childcare facility and being bused to back to school for pre-K. They're being poured by a scholarship or maybe CCAP and then back again. They're taking up two spots where maybe we could be helping two kids. Or maybe they're being taken to Head Start in the afternoon. There was actually testimony last week about a child who was being given two lunches because they were given a lunch in each program the same day. So while I, again, am a strong advocate of providing these children in need what they need, we are not coordinating it well. We are not spending our dollars wisely or efficiently. And so that's what we're going to strive to do with the education dollars that we get. So, Mr. Chair, while you and I have talked long and hard about my target, I'm going to support your resolution and oppose the Marquardt Amendment.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the Marquardt A5 Amendment.
Representative Knobloch?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Cornish? No. Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dean?
No.
Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Drazkowski? No. Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Gunther?
No.
Representative Hamilton? Representative
Hausman? Yes.
Representative Hillstrom?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Loon? Representative Marquardt? Yes. Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Nornes? Representative Pulowski?
Yes.
Representative Poppy? Representative Torkelson? Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 16 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there another amendment? Representative Pulowski.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A4 amendment, and I'll ask for a roll call.
Okay, Representative Pulowski moves the A4 amendment and requests a roll call. Representative Pulowski, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the A4 amendment is approximately $330 million, so it's about $30 million over the governor. It would allow, if it were adopted, to freeze tuition at the undergraduate level for Minnesota State, both at the colleges and universities. It would allow tuition to be frozen at the University of Minnesota at the undergraduate level. And there would also be approximately $60 million to invest in the grant program. This committee and the Higher Ed Committee and across this state and nation, we have discussed the impact of the historic tuition increases as a result of the recession and the historic debt. We now know that student debt in this nation exceeds credit card debt. We know that we are fourth and fifth in the nation in the amount of debt that students carry and the number of students that carry that debt. We've seen the impact of this on our institutions of higher learning, and this amendment, I hope, would go a long way to restore the damage that was done over the recession. And I tried to anticipate the comments that Representative Davids made because I learned a lot by being on the Tax Conference Committee, which I was drafted to be on last year. And the amount that I have in the amendment should still leave Representative Davids with more in his tax bill than he had in 2016. And when I signed the Conference Committee report, we were still doing all the good things he said he wanted to do today. So hopefully, if this were adopted, he could still proceed with all of those good things, and we'd be able to do a very good thing at higher ed.
Well, thank you, Representative Pulowski. You know, I think when it comes to freezing tuition, we've already had some testimony from one of the institutions, the University of Minnesota, that they're planning on raising tuition, I think, almost regardless of what we might give them in terms of additional money. And certainly I think that higher education is important. I think we've made some good progress on a bipartisan basis over the last biennium in putting additional funds into higher education. We're proposing to put some additional significant funds into higher education with the budget target that I proposed in the RES-01 amendment. And so I would oppose the Pawlowski A4 amendment. Further discussion to the amendment? Seeing no discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the Pawlowski A4 amendment.
Representative Knobloch?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Baker? Representative Cornish? Representative Davids? Representative Dean? Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Gunther?
No.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom?
Yes.
Representative Horsley?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Nornes?
No.
Representative Pawlowski?
Yes.
Representative Poppe?
Yes.
Representative Torkelson? Representative Erdahl?
No.
Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Members, there being 10 ayes and 15 nays, the motion does not prevail and the A4 amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I will move the, I think it's the remaining amendment, the DE1.
Representative Carlson moves the DE1
and,
amendment.
And Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment basically reflects or does reflect the governor's budget as revised with his change orders or, as some say, supplemental budget. And I'd like to point out that this amendment would provide a balanced and fair approach to the state budget. And I know when we had a press conference that I participated in from our side of the aisle before we got down this road of proposing various proposals relative to the budget resolution and ultimately the funding levels for the finance committees, I pointed out to the press at the time that it was important to have a balanced approach to the state budget. And this is what I'm proposing, and it's the approach that the governor used. This is a budget that helps build a strong economy by placing a priority on education. I was disappointed when the Marquardt Amendment didn't pass for education because that was a bit better than what is in this amendment. This was or is an amendment that will provide 2 and 2 instead of the 2.5 and the 2.5, but clearly it gets closer to the rate of inflation and does better than what is in the Knobloch amendment. This amendment also helps build our infrastructure and create jobs. It uses the governor's capital investment or bonding level proposal. It's a budget that makes college more affordable, and it's a budget that helps working families. It's also a budget that addresses public safety. It's a budget that expands opportunity for all Minnesotans, and I think that's the thing that I would like to underscore. If I quickly were to walk you through the amendment, because sometimes with these total amounts, it's a little difficult to follow the differences. But it does come in a little bit below your overall spending by about $4.6 million. We are the same as your proposal relative to the reserve. We're higher than your proposal by, we put $9,893,000 into agriculture. The capital investment debt service, which would provide then for a $1.5 billion bonding bill, is $74,046,000. The education finance bill would be $452,000,000. And these are numbers above your numbers, so don't confuse that, for example, with the amendment we had earlier that was, I think, at $813,000,000. So these are all numbers, not block plus. And then we have the environmental natural resources above you by $85,897,000. The human services finance bill, we would be $207,892,000 above the Knobloch amendment. And then there are, as we all know, some changes with the health care access fund relative to the governor's numbers, and which actually net out if that were that won't be in the budget resolution, but I'm just pointing it out that's part of the governor's proposal, where I think we would be about $300 million above current funding level if that were done. Higher education, $168,541,000. Job growth and affordability, $100,606,000. Like you, this amendment has zero for the legacy because that's not a part of the general fund. Public safety, $151,431,000 above yours. State government finance, $225,954,000 above yours. The tax bill, then, we would reduce to a lower level because we're providing a more balanced approach. And then transportation is one that's a bit in play. The governor's number here reduces transportation, and I just want to take a quick minute on that, by approximately $362,857, and we all know that there are certain things in play with transportation. The governor has a proposal that would backfill this plus, and you're carrying transportation dollars, as I understand it. I looked over the when the tax bill was posted, something like $450 million, I think, in the tax bill. And then the transportation bill is, that's going to be reported out sometime soon. And they put the bill together, I'm told, also is carrying $450 million. So I'm not sure how you're going to reconcile that, but this is what's in our amendment at this point in time. But I just want to point out to others that transportation is very much under discussion in a variety of ways. And we do have two people here that are quite involved with transportation that may want to comment further if need be. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the amendment. I would move that amendment and request the committee's support.
Okay, well, thank you, Representative Carlson. And members, I'm not going to spend a great deal of time going through this line by line. We've had kind of a discussion on the education and higher education areas already, and I did go through the original resolution line by line, and obviously, there's a stark contrast here between the governor in some areas and the resolution that I proposed. But one item I do want to point out is line 22, and that is the transportation area. You'll see the governor is recommending spending $225 million, and we are recommending spending $587 million, almost three times what the governor is recommending. And members, you know, we really need to spend some more money on roads and bridges in this state. We really need to spend some more money on transportation. And I guess I think, Representative Carlson, when I look at the needs we have for more road and bridge funding in this state, and the plan that we have on the Republican side to deliver and provide more money for roads and bridges. I really think that this is something that's missing from the DE1 amendment. And so, members, I think that's a good reason to vote against the DE1 amendment, and I will ask for a roll call vote on the DE1 amendment. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to comment on the transportation issue briefly. You had mentioned in your presentation it was 111% increase, et cetera. But really, it's not an increase because you're taking money from other parts of the budget, whether it's education or seniors or some of the other folks that Representative Davids was talking about. So accurate to say that you're increasing transportation because you're doing it at the expense of other parts of the budget. It's not long term. It's not dedicated. It's not sustainable. We have a much better approach for a long term and sustainable transportation plan.
Representative Houseman.
Well, just following up a bit on that, I think that gets at the heart of the other bigger debate that we're going to be having this legislative session. And that is, how do we get what so many in the state were expecting, which is permanent sustainable. But I think the bigger concern when we saw the transportation solution was to borrow well over $1 billion and pay for it with cash from the general fund. That's sort of like an appropriation bond. You have to appropriate. So we borrow $1 billion, and then every biennium, some committee is going to have to appropriate the cash from the general fund to pay for that borrowing. And we've had some discussion about that, and it's interesting to see it in such large number in that bill. And what doesn't come from borrowing comes from cash from the general fund, where, in fact, as others have observed, that is where you fight with education and health care and all of the other good things that we need to do in this state. So I think this particular line gets at the heart of a very big difference in approach to funding transportation. Is it real money sustainable for the long term or not?
Well, and I guess in response, Representative Hornstein and Houseman, I guess I would just say that certainly this is additional general fund money we're talking about spending. There has been and will continue to be debate about the priorities for where we should spend general fund money. But we are proposing to spend far more general fund money on roads and bridges in the resolution that I have authored than in the DE1 amendment that is before us here. And I guess I would really ask people to vote against the DE1 amendment so that we can more properly fund the road and bridge and transportation needs that we have in this state. Representative Houseman.
And Mr. Chair, because we just had huge amounts of testimony from all over the state and from every entity, what almost everyone understands is if you use cash from the general fund, that is kind of one-time money. And so once they've done those projects, this isn't going to be new revenue for the long term, as an increase in one of those revenue streams would be, which would be there for the long term. I think that's what everyone is understanding who testified today.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't normally speak on transportation, but I'm listening to your explanation, and I'm listening to the explanations from Representatives Houseman and Hornstein. And I'm looking at this amendment, and, of course, we could just as well look at this thing and say, my gosh, we're giving zero for legacy. How can that be? Aren't we all stingy? Nothing for the legacy fund. Well, of course, we all understand that that's because it's not in the confines of this resolution. And that is exactly what they are saying. You're here arguing, oh, our resolution, our budget does better for transportation. Well, we all know that's not really accurate because the other proposals for transportation simply use other money and lots more of it. And I think that's something that the public really can understand pretty well, and I'm sure my colleagues can correct me if I'm misunderstanding that point, but I think that that is the point, that although the governor's budget didn't have as much coming out of the general fund, that his actual proposal is sustainable long-term funding for transportation that is far superior to what you've offered here.
Well, to Representative Hausman, I guess I would just say I believe that this funding is sustainable. We're looking at dedicating various revenue streams that right now do go into the general fund but are related to transportation, things like a sales tax on auto parts, sales tax that exists on lease cars, the rental car tax, all things that are related to automobiles and roads and bridges, taxes that go for these purposes. And I believe that, and the numbers we've seen are that this is sustainable. But again, while yes, there are other non-general fund items that go into transportation, simply look at the numbers. The resolution I've provided says we should spend $587 million here on transportation, and the DE1 amendment that is before us here says we should spend $225 million, 60-some percent less. And so, members, I hope you would reject the DE1 amendment. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I made it clear when I presented it, and you've heard the at least from our side of the aisle about what some of the problems are. But you did repeatedly use the phrase general fund dollars, and that goes to the crux of the problem here. We had excellent testifying this evening about the needs in education, K-12 in particular, when the people came forward. We had very good testimony about the needs in the field of mental health. You're setting up, if you prevail on this, with severe competition for other priorities in our state budget. That's why I said at the time that this was going to be a separate debate, if you will. The governor has, separate from these numbers, a transportation proposal, and you have one too. The difference here, by the way, and one of the reasons that the number appears on the resolution the way it does, is that a lot of that was one-time money that the governor is moving over to his overall transportation proposals. So we have to keep that in mind as well. But there again, I would appreciate the committee's support for the amendment.
Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll on the Carlson DE1 amendment.
Representative Knobloch?
No.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Cornish?
No.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dean? Representative Detmer?
No.
Representative Jaskowski? Representative Fabian?
No.
Representative Garofalo? Representative Gunther?
No.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
Representative Hausman?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Representative Loon? Representative Marquardt? Representative Murphy? Representative Nornes? Representative Pawlowski?
No.
Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Torkelson? Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative.
No.
Sorry, guys. I think it was the first vote. I think you always take the first vote, right?
Representative Wagenius.
Erdahl votes no. Did you call Representative Wagenius?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, members, there being 7 ayes and 19 nays, the DE1 amendment is not adopted. Members, we have the RES-01 resolution before us. Is there any discussion to the resolution itself, other than what's been done? Well, I'd appreciate your support. All in favor of the RES-01 resolution, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The RES-01 resolution is adopted. Members, I want to alert you to the fact that we may have a short Ways and Means meeting after session tomorrow in case there are any other changes that need to be made in targets. I'll announce that on the floor. Are there any other questions? Representative Carlson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I didn't quite hear you.
In case there are any changes in what?
In case we need to add any other changes to the budget resolution.
Well, for the, so would be potentially the budget resolution again tomorrow night?
Potentially.
For example,
we don't have a health care access fund target in here yet, and we're kind of waiting to determine exactly what that should be.
But there are no other bills, and Mr. Chairman, that would be dealing with the health care access fund. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think that would be a primary item, but certainly we could have other items that appear. It's a fluid situation. If people have amendments, I won't hold anyone to a 24-hour rule.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it would be helpful, though, if we at some point then had posted specifically what will
we,
be.
We will do that as early as we can.
I'm just saying the budget resolution then. It sounded like there's a couple of maybes there that you might bring forward, but it would be helpful to know. The other thing I was going to ask before we break, I know that the various finance committees have been meeting and putting their bills together, which I found rather interesting, being that we just took action tonight to set the targets, so you must have given them the targets informally. I don't think any of them have voted their bills out, so they probably are. Or have some voted them out? Okay. But at any rate, we generally do the budget resolution and then the targets. But my question is really next week, being that your committees have been working, what kind of week might we expect because we're moving into the busy season for Ways and Means?
Representative Carlson, I expect it will be a busy week in Ways and Means next week, and I can't remember, honestly, all the different bills that we have for each day. I expect we will be meeting on Monday, however, more likely Monday evening to likely, and of course it all depends on what happens in other committees, be taking up some omnibus bills.
Well, Mr. Chairman, will you...
And I'll alert you to it as I have some more information.
Will you be able to come out with a weekly schedule and perhaps tell us... what your best guess is, which bills will be up which days then next week?
Well, Representative Carlson, you know, it's always kind of a fluid situation depending on what happens in committees. But I'll get you some more information on it.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, we are adjourned.